This is the Monday edition of your Bet the Board podcast. We'll be joined by Payne Insider in just a matter of seconds. Hopefully you tuned in Thursday, found yourself at the window more often than not on a busy Sunday board. Of course, co-host Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm your host, Todd Furman. Payne, before we get into what we learned yesterday, anything really jump out at you for tonight's preview as you look to break down the Chiefs and Patriots?
It looks like a lot of movement, and that's one thing I'm keeping an eye on. We saw this game in our pre-preview of the Monday night, and we said Kansas City plus 4.5, 4 would not last, and that seems to hold true here going through the 3. And we've also seen an interesting move on the total, open 45, we're now at about 47.5, and that intrigues me a little bit. I'm not sure how real that move is. Obviously, it's something to pay attention to. There's a group on the over, but I think we will see another couple groups if this reaches 48 that they come under on this game. So a lot of movement, and it'll be interesting to see unfold on Monday night.
Yeah, it seems like a little bit of reverse correlation when you consider Kansas City taking money and the total starting to tick up, albeit Kansas City did have their explosion last week against Miami, and then the Dolphins followed it up with a pretty impressive effort offensively from their own end against the Oakland Raiders. When you look at this game and the move, of course, as you alluded to, when you told folks to get on the 4 if that was the side they were looking for, you have seen some resistance at 2.5. We don't play the whole X's and O's, guys. We leave that to scouts and coaches. But what do you expect to see unfold on the field, you know, the overall worth of Jamal Charles potentially being back instead of Nile Davis, some of the other gambling components that we should factor into the equation before arriving at a final conclusion on where to bet tonight's game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge X's and O's guy, but I think this is going to be one in the middle of the field if the linebackers for each team can tackle, and that's the key there, not allowing the yards after the catch. We know both offenses like to dink and dunk, and I think whoever tackles best wins this game. And when you kind of look at this and see this trend upwards on the total, and you're looking at these offenses, and I know a lot of people have talked about, you know, New England going a little more up-tempo, but for me, they've kind of always been that way from a pace factor. It's just the efficiency right now, not being able to have a lot of deep threats, a lot of weapons. They're still top five in pace right now. And on the flip side, you get a Kansas City team with Reed. Everyone thinks up-tempo, fast-paced. They're in the bottom half of the league in pace at 19. So this isn't different than anything they've done from last year. It's really right around the same number. So that's why this move was so interesting to me. But again, I think whoever tackles best in the middle of that field with the dink and dunk stuff is going to win this game. Jamal Charles, Nile Davis, we've talked about this kind of ad nauseum. At this point, I don't see a huge upgrade there. I think Nile Davis, one of the better backs in the league, maybe Jamal Charles a little better in the pass game. So that's really the lone difference for me, maybe a point at the very most.
And a note from the sportsbook side, interesting when you consider the Patriots, typically a very public team, seeing about 55-45 as far as betting splits here. Of course, the general public now has the opportunity to lay a bit of a shorter number if they want to back Bill Belichick's team in primetime. Tom Brady in these particular spots, 13-5 straight up. Of course, his ATS record not nearly that good. So something to factor into the equation. Do we think this number ends up settling at a soft 3, a pretty safe assumption to make with a total somewhere right around where it's at 47 when we're having this discussion about 10 minutes before kickoff tonight?
You know, it's tough for me right now when I look at this. You're looking at some of the sharper shops, Greek, Chris. You're looking at soft 3s. When you gauge those sports books, though, in my mind, very sharp, especially when you talk about the Greek, they kind of had the foresight not to go below the 2.5, knowing we would see some public money on New England. Last thing you really want to do as a sports book is get middled on the 3 when you're given plus 4 earlier in the week and then you dip below the 3. I think it's really a slippery slope, and as sharp as Pinnacle is, still being at 2.5 really tells me a lot on what the right side in this game is. I'm not sure we see them go back to 3. Maybe we do as a book move for some protection before the public starts to kind of come in droves after they get out of work. The total, as we're talking about it right now, 45.5, now gone from Pinnacle, LVH, and Chris, and it's starting to trend downwards just a little bit.
Yeah, and interesting, again, I know we can talk about the math behind some of these numbers, but the difference in laying 2.5 minus 20 versus laying 3 at plus 105. That's widely available. For me and my dollar, you know, I'm looking to lay a little bit more of a price, knowing that if I think I have the edge on New England, instead of having to go that particular field goal route. But I think we've covered this Monday night game in great detail. You know, predicted where the number was going to go. Now, hopefully, the game will play out as anticipated. As far as the next primetime game that we'll encounter on Thursday night, you see this number for Minnesota Green Bay opening at 10, total at 49. I'm not going to break down every game. Just wanted to hit on this one, given the quarterback situation in Minnesota. Should we be working under the assumption that Teddy Bridgewater will be on the sidelines and Christian Ponder most likely taking snaps for the Vikings when they head up to Lambeau Field?
You know, I think this line indicates such. When you're looking at a 10, we have seen some 9.5s, but I think that's kind of some protection at this stage. I know Teddy Bridgewater has said all the right things. He said he wants to be out there. He wants to play Thursday night. When you get the ankle injury he had, it looked worse than it was, and then they cart him off the field, and you're thinking, wow, this really stinks. The kid looked great. But then he comes back out. He's on his feet. So there are some potential for him to play here. But obviously this number, in my mind, factors in at 10 that he's not going to play. If he is playing, I think you see something around the 7.5 mark. So it'll be interesting to monitor throughout the course of the week.
Yeah, exactly my mindset, and more importantly for folks looking for a more in-depth breakdown of that Thursday night game, encourage you to tune in on Thursday afternoon when we do our midweek update to make sure we can offer you some of that best information available out there in the betting markets. And as we do as our Monday tradition, you know, week 4 almost in the books, and more importantly, we're starting to learn a lot about all of these teams that we've seen play the better part of 240 minutes thus far. Of course, 6 teams were on bye this week, so they haven't quite played as many games, but what really jumped off the page as far as some, you know, major surprises, both of the pleasant variety and teams that may have disappointed you in this weekend's games, Bane?
You know, a couple of the games that I wanted to sit back and watch, we talked about it, was the Green Bay-Chicago game. Green Bay did impress me. Obviously, a big transition, a big momentum play right there before half with the Bears not getting in to the end zone. That's one of the biggest momentum plays of the entire game, and that kind of, I think, set things in a different direction. But Green Bay needed a win. They got it. They were pretty impressive to me. And when you talk about a couple teams that disappointed, you know, you have to look to the Oakland Raiders. We called them a dumpster fire in week 1. Right now, that is just, very, very bad team. And when you look at this, and the opportunity they might have out of the bye week might be their lone shot at a victory. You get a bye week, you get San Diego out the other side. That might be their only shot when you look at this schedule the rest of the way for a win. I hate to talk 0-16, but there is some potential for that. And another team that disappointed to me was San Francisco, and they did so in a win. That was a game that I know they won, and if you were able to enter the market at the correct time, you got
to
cover
and you got to win. You had to throw that out there, huh, for someone that's sitting on him at -5.5 in a contest like a Jamoke. I figured I was going to get that jab, but continue.
So that's, for me, that was the big thing there. They were just disappointed. That was their Super Bowl. They couldn't put Philadelphia away. Their offense still looks like it has some serious issues. So they were pretty disappointing to me. And then another team that looked really good, obviously, Sunday night, Dallas Cowboys. That offensive line looks to be the best in all of football. It's just affording Murray just to run the ball, keep Romo away from making mistakes. And the defense playing with the chip on their shoulder. You get McClain off a scrap heap and Carter, who is benched, and all of a sudden those two linebackers are playing well. And Dallas, obviously, a big, big surprise so far this season.
Yeah, may want to know what's getting passed around that Cowboys locker room looking at McClain and how effective he's been on the defensive side. But, hey, that's not our job. It's only to figure out how we can profit from some of these teams. You hit on the Cowboys, and I think they put together one of the most impressive efforts of the entire weekend. Tony Romo's comments coming out and saying that he thinks that this Dallas offense is the most complete that he's been surrounded by in his time. The emergence of Terrence Williams really gives them the deep threat. We hit on Teddy Bridgewater a little bit, but I want to say this Vikings offense really opened my eyes, and it wasn't as much the passing game and Jarius Wright's 8 catches for 130 yards, Teddy Bridgewater throwing for 300-plus, but the ground and pound we saw from Matt Asiata, who picked up all the touchdowns, and Jerick McKinnon, 18 carries, 135 yards. The Falcons really had no answer, and this was a game that had some interesting line move. You saw a pretty pronounced price adjustment from 3 out to 4, climbing as high as 4.5. We know it was a hugely public side, but there had to be a little bit of sharp money that had an appetite given how early that number moved on Sunday morning.
Yeah, I agree with you. We saw a move earlier in the week. It was 2.5. And, you know, you probably saw some professional money at that price. At 3, I know we talked about it. There's going to be some interest from the sharp groups at 3. But then you see it was actually Saturday night, a slight tick up in juice getting out ahead of that 3. There were some injuries. Obviously, Minnesota loses one of their top offensive weapons in Rudolph. They lose their middle linebacker in the process. And then once it got to 4, it seemed to be kind of a snowball effect. I knew at that point the best juncture to enter was waiting right until kickoff because the public was going to be all over Atlanta based on what they saw Thursday night on national television. But this is a Vikings team that led virtually box to wire, did surrender the lead 28-27 later on. Teddy Bridgewater brought him back. But when you talk about nearly 600 yards of total offense, Minnesota was extremely impressive. Bridgewater looks like the real deal. And we kind of talked about this last week when professionals were betting the Vikings on the road plus 3.5 in the second half at New Orleans, what they thought of Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, and that may be an indictment, too, of the Saints as well, if you want to extrapolate further, given you did see some money coming on the Cowboys for that game, and a game that Dallas, probably the easiest winner you could have had on the entire NFL board. And you talk about dumpster fires. I guess we do have to give a little credit to one of the friends of the program, Dickie Salvatore, out there, who wants shirts made for Oakland. But there's another dumpster fire going on in northern Florida right now, albeit with maybe a bit of a silver lining. Jacksonville, they build a 14-10 lead against the Chargers, end up giving up the final 23 points of the game to drop them to 0-4. But you look at these two teams, Jacksonville struggling to cover numbers, now 0-4 against the spread. Lo and behold, their opponent, the Chargers, 4-0. How do you approach both of those sides moving forward? Do you really believe San Diego is going to be overvalued and Jacksonville undervalued in the coming weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to. I mean, this is a market. I know a lot of people don't like to view it as such, but when you get into it at a professional level, away from, you know, being the drunk guy at the bar liking to bet sports, that's really what this is. And when you have a market that's kind of at a peak both directions, we saw professionals come in on the Jaguars. That was a line that got up to 13.5, 14 even some places, closed in that 12.5 range. Unfortunately, the Jaguars couldn't hold on. And I think we kind of just talked on it a little bit. If you were to ever, you know, be a buyer on the Raiders, you might be talking out of their bye week in 2 weeks when they face a San Diego team. And I know a spot that we were kind of looking at, and although we did have the Buccaneers yesterday, we were hoping that Pittsburgh might win that game at least straight up to where we'd have a nice spot here on Jacksonville getting 7 or 7.5. Unfortunately, Pittsburgh loses, and now we're looking at, you know, a 6.5 below that second key number of 7.
Yeah, definitely. It was a spot that we had talked great lengths, and when you try and set up some of your bets, you need to look 2 and 3 weeks down the calendar. Encourage all folks that are just getting started in the NFL, even for some of the veterans that lose sight of the task at hand, you always want to make sure you have that schedule handy and know you need A to happen before B and C can come tumbling down the pipes. One of the interesting games, I guess, that we'll see next week, and you've seen a move already on the favorite, Indianapolis playing host to Baltimore, price opened at 3, albeit you had to lay some juice, number now ticking out to 3.5. You know, what do we take away from those two teams, from the Colts and Ravens, both coming off dominating performance where the covers were really never in jeopardy? And then I guess on the flip side, Carolina, who for the second straight week struggled to move the football effectively, and as a home game is a short favorite coming up against the Chicago Bears.
You know, it's always tough to gauge. You have Baltimore and Indianapolis both off blowout wins, so there's really not going to be a ton in terms of what the market tells you. But right now you get an Indianapolis team that's trending in the right direction. This is a team that's 2-2, but competed opening night, Sunday night, against Denver. They really gave a game away on Monday night against Philadelphia. You're looking at a team that could be 3-1 and maybe even 4-0. So that's what we've seen with this. Indianapolis at home, Baltimore just a different beast. Away from home, Flacco, a different guy, away from home. So I kind of agree with this move to 3.5. When you talk about Chicago, Carolina, opposite end of the spectrum, two teams to me that are playing bad, bad football right now, and I think both teams are fortunate to be 2-2 right now. So that's another tough one for me to gauge. Early look, in my opinion here, you'd kind of look towards Chicago. I just do not think Cam Newton is 100% healthy, but it's really early. I don't like this game. One game that, again, I probably won't be betting, but two good glimpses at the market on teams that are coming off two big wins, two teams coming off of disappointing losses.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see how perception gets adjusted, and if you can't find some of those intangible edges, there are plenty of games on a given card that you can steer clear of. Now, a game that I think is probably the most fascinating, as we'll close with this on the what did we learn and maybe what to look forward to before we let you dust off your crystal ball and tell us what games are probably going to be on the move. Arizona and Denver, both teams out of a bye. Arizona undefeated with a little bit of a surprising start, and the Denver Broncos fresh off their loss against Seattle, but one that I give them full marks for, and you know, a moral victory. Looking at Denver as a 7.5-point favorite, total of 49. Number looks like it's starting to trend downwards. Actually opened at 8.5, and you've seen some money come in on the Cardinals in this spot.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way to look here, is getting Arizona anything over a touchdown. I think we will see some money on this under come in just a little bit. Arizona, very good defensively. I think they tackle well enough to kind of keep Denver's short passing game from going too crazy. Denver's defense, very impressed with them at Seattle. Unfortunately, they couldn't get that last stop in overtime, but I think this is a defense in Denver that will continue to improve as they get acclimated to their new pieces and get healthy on that side of the ball. So I think you'll really see a market correction on Denver totals, where the public thinks this is just a high-scoring team that blows everybody out. Instead, their defense is really going to take a turn, and they're going to be very good. And Denver will, I think, go to a little more ball control offense, running the ball a little more, and I think we'll start to see their totals adjust in the next few weeks.
And maybe a bit of a foreshadowing where that number will go. The voice you're hearing on that end of the line is he of Payne Insider fame. You can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider and see a lot of his great work at PayneInsider.com. Plenty of great sports betting information and one of the best free line trackers you're going to be able to find anywhere on the internet. Very easy to use across all sports. Encourage you folks to check that out. I'm Todd Furman. You can find my work at toddstake.com and check out our college football column every Wednesday, winners and losers at outkickthecoverage.com. Vegas top 10, which will have some movement this week given some of the results of the weekend. And Payne, what we usually like to close with on Monday, you know, taking a look at these numbers now that have just been up, the markets haven't matured, games that we think are going to start to move, where people should be looking to lock in a favorite dog potential over-under bet now to make sure they have the best of the number and they can wake up with a smile on their face Sunday, only needing the game to fall the right way instead of chasing a price.
I think the Battle of Texas is a game that's going to be on the move. Obviously, Houston right now having a tough time stopping the run, so the matchup isn't great against that Dallas offensive line. But at some point, we know this is a Dallas team that doesn't have a huge home field advantage. We're looking at 4.5 at the win. We saw 4.5 a little before we hopped on this podcast, so I think that number is going to be long gone. And another one, even though it's trended this way early, where the Giants opened 3, you're now looking at a 4.5 on Atlanta. We know what Atlanta looked like. Again, we know this is likely a bad matchup with the Giants' defensive line versus Atlanta's offensive line. But if ever there was a spot for Atlanta on the road, this is a team with playoff revenge multiple years in a row. I think Atlanta is probably a game that you can wait on, but will definitely be the sharp side later in the week.
Yeah, I think it definitely makes sense. And again, I know we talked about one team. Keep an eye on the New York Jets this particular week. Injury situation, if Dean Milner's healthy, I think this could be a spot where they can force the Chargers to be one-dimensional. Really don't expect this number to look like a 7 as we approach kickoff for Sunday's games. But Payne, another week in the books and another podcast. A job well done over there, my friend.
I appreciate it.
Hey, I do what I can to offer up compliments. But before Payne Insider and PayneInsider.com, I'm Todd Furman. Best of luck with your Monday Night Football selections, and we'll be right back at you on Thursday to break down the Thursday game between Minnesota and Green Bay, and more importantly, preview all the big matchups for Week 5 of the NFL campaign.